grief is something that impacts pretty much everybody at some point. It's part of the human experience, the feeling after losing someone you were close to. But our next guest realized that for such a universal experience, grief can feel pretty lonely. Two Baltimore-based mental health professionals decided there was a space and a need for more resources for people living with grief, so they created the website What's Your Grief? Litza Williams and Eleanor Haley join us now. Litza, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having us.
And Eleanor, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, thank you. We're glad to be here.
Litza, to get us started, tell us a little more about how and why you two started What's Your Grief?
Sure. Eleanor and I both have backgrounds in mental health and grief and bereavement, and we were working in Baltimore with families who had experienced, for the most part, traumatic and unexpected losses. And we had the privilege and really unique experience of working with families from the time of death at the hospital with a loved one through 2 years of grief and bereavement aftercare services. And in doing that, we realized just how diverse the needs of people who are grieving are. We realized just different styles, different interest in things like in-person support and support groups, counseling versus finding other ways to cope. And we started developing more and more of an interest in some non-traditional ways to support people who were grieving beyond just in-person counseling and support groups. And from doing that, What's Your Grief was sort of born. We joke that we complained for a long time about not being able to find things online that worked for us, and feeling like from our own personal experiences with grief and loss combined with the professional experience that we really saw there was a gap there and just set out to fill that.
Eleanor, as Litza mentioned, you both had personal experiences, I think, around the same time with loss that helped, in addition to your professional efforts, help drive the creation of What's Your Grief. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. We both experienced the death of a parent in early adulthood, though Litza was a little bit younger. She was in late teens, I believe, Litza. And I was in my early 20s, but we were in a similar stage of life. And we were working, you know, in the years afterwards. And so oftentimes what the litmus test would be for the types of support that we wanted to offer would be, would this have been something that resonated with us in our grief? Would this have been something that we would have read? Would this be a community that we would engage with? And so What's Your Grief very much came from the lack of being able to find certain things that would have appealed to us. Quite often, the go-to suggestion for grief support is support groups, which are wonderful in many ways, but there are many people who are never going to step foot in a support group. And so for people like that, we want to look at other outlets and other ways. And I think those are the ways that also resonate with us. Things like creative expression, things like continuing your bond with your loved one through different kinds of rituals and events and things like that. So we were very much, our practice is very much informed by our own personal experiences as well as our professional training.
And Litza, you mentioned the diversity of experience of people dealing with grief. It sounds like it would be impossible to come up with a one size fits all approach because it affects people differently.
Absolutely. I think one of the biggest misconceptions about grief is that it's going to look similar or the same for everyone. I think some of those old grief models that caught on very early on, things like the five stages of grief, created this idea that we could predict what grief might look like, where there's a series of stages that we're all going to go through. And we know now that that's not the way that grief works. Those theories can be helpful, and there can be information, things that we can take them from them that are useful. But I think that idea that it created a feeling that there's a universal experience, it's simply not how grief works. And it's not how coping works. We all cope so differently. Some people really love to talk about their feelings and their emotions, and they process things a little more externally and emotionally. And some people are a little bit more analytical, a little more cognitive, rational. You know, they look for more kind of physical and concrete ways to cope, and lots of creative outlets for coping. And so the range and diversity is huge in both how we grieve and how we cope with all difficult things.
Eleanor, can it lead to guilt if people feel like, oh, I'm doing grief wrong? I see everybody else, it's supposed to be this way, but I feel this way.
Oh my goodness, yes. Guilt is such a huge experience for people who are grieving for many reasons. Both guilt towards the experience of how the person engaged with their loved one while they were alive and when they died. And then, as you mentioned, through feelings of maybe doubt about oneself and shame about how one is grieving. Oftentimes, people encourage people to be strong, to move on. They look at them sort of oddly, if they have been talking about their grief and struggling for what somebody or society might deem as quote unquote too long. So people oftentimes do feel a number of negative feelings, including grief or guilt, about how their grief is progressing. And what one of the main things that we have wanted to do with our website is to just normalize that grief is so many different things. And no matter how long or how your grief is manifesting itself, so many of these experiences are normal and it's okay. And your people are doing the best that they can. So yeah, absolutely. Guilt is a big, big topic within our practice.
We're talking to Eleanor Haley and Litza Williams, creators of the website, What's Your Grief? Litza, a common theme in some of the things you have on your website and comments from your audience, your community there is like the mundane and surprising ways the grief affects people. It's not just the sadness with grief. It can have all these unexpected symptoms in people's daily lives.
Oh, yeah. I think one of the biggest things that draws people to our website when we can go and look at what did people Google to end up here is oftentimes just them saying, I'm grieving and I'm not crying. You know, what's that about? Or I'm feeling anger, or I'm feeling anxiety, or, you know, I'm feeling all these different feelings, and I'm trying to figure out, is that normal or is that not normal? So grief is so much more than sadness. It is so many different feelings. I think the other thing people often find is that grief triggers are everywhere. It's not just the big things that we imagine are going to bring up that feeling of sadness and missing our loved one and yearning to be able to talk to them again. That come to mind. Often it's walking into a store and there's a song playing and just all of a sudden you kind of have a meltdown and have to abandon your shopping cart and go out into the parking lot, and you don't see it coming. And so I think we find a lot of people who find us through that experience of feeling like, is this normal or is this a sign that I'm losing it, that I'm having these unusual, what feel unusual feelings or experiences cropping up when, as Eleanor said, so much of this is normal. And so that's what we try to normalize on our site, is just, you're not losing it. This is just part of how grief works.
Well, speaking of those things that can trigger that memory even well after the fact, Eleanor, I think it was you wrote about the deathiversary, the anniversary of someone's death, and how to deal with that and maybe make rituals around that. Can you talk about that a little?
Absolutely. I think one of the things when people say, how do we support a friend or a family member who's grieving, we of course talk about the things you can do in the immediate. But one of the things that we always emphasize is the importance of that year mark for many people and checking in around that time. Because for many people, that is such a difficult time of year. And it's not always just that day in particular. It might be the weeks and the days that lead up to that day. You might reflect back on, what were you doing this a year ago at this time? And so it is such a big day, and it can really be a day that brings on a sense of dread for people who are grieving somebody. And so we do encourage people to spend the day in a way that they feel comfortable with. We say that it's okay if you want to take the day to feel very, you know, to feel very bad and cry and stay inside, and that's okay. But we do encourage people to at least find a few ways, if not just one way, to really honor and connect with their loved one. And it doesn't have to be something big. It doesn't have to be a big party or a memorial or a celebration of life or anything like that. It can be the smallest thing, like, on this day, I'm going to go to one place that makes me feel close to my loved one, or I'm going to make sure to tell a stranger one story about my loved one, or I'm going to sit down and write a letter to my loved one and tell them all the things that have changed over the years since they've died. And so there are so many different little ways, and we do encourage people to just find a few things or one thing that they can do on that day to connect with their loved one.
We're talking to mental health professionals Litza Williams and Eleanor Haley. They're the creators of the website What's Your Grief? Helping people talk about and cope with grief in their lives and the diversity of experiences people have with grief. Litza, Eleanor had mentioned people supporting friends and loved ones dealing with grief themselves. And I saw on your website there was you have a list of words that we need in dealing with grief, and one word was head tilters. And I've been guilty of this, the person who tilts their head and talks slowly and sadly and supportively. And that's not necessarily a great way to help somebody out. What's a better way to support someone, Litza?
Yeah, I think this is really well-intentioned. I think everyone is really well-intentioned often in supporting another person who is grieving. We just often don't know what to do and what to say. And so one of the things that we really encourage people to do is just know that it can just be a normal part of conversation, and that we can, you know, be able to talk about this without tilting our heads and talking in soft voices, and just acknowledge that we're not going to be able to change or fix what a person is going through, but we can be there for them. We can be there to listen to them. One thing that we know people often, the inclination to do is to try to find a silver lining or to sometimes minimize what somebody's going through. So we always joke, you know, if you're about to start a sentence with "at least," you should probably stop. You know, "at least he lived a long life," at least you can get remarried. You know, people say all sorts of things that I think in the moment are well-intended to try to find something positive or something to hold on to. But in that moment when someone has lost someone, really what they need most is just that validation that this is the worst thing that ever could have happened to them, and that you understand that, and that you'll just be there to walk alongside them, be there in whatever way they need, but not try to, you know, find that silver lining for someone in a moment where sometimes they just need someone to be there for them.
Let's bring on a caller now. Mary Beth is with us in New Berlin. Mary Beth, hi.
Hi.
What do you want to tell us about Mary Beth?
Well, you were talking about triggers, and after my husband died, I went to the grocery store on Valentine's Day, and there was this just adorable young person selling Valentine candy, and he took my breath away. I just stood there going, "I don't have a Valentine." Oh. I mean, it was just, and I was so surprised by that reaction, because it was definitely a trigger.
Mary Beth, thank you so much for calling in and sharing that story. And Eleanor, Mary Beth is not alone, right? That trigger can come out of nowhere for people.
Oh, no, certainly not. I think many people have that experience where they're very surprised by what the trigger is. And it does, like she said, it takes your breath away. And that's why we hear from people all the time that they were in a store and something caught them off guard and they had to leave. It was so effective. And so I think that when we talk about triggers, there are two types: the ones that catch us off guard, like those unexpected grief triggers, and then the ones we can sort of anticipate. And you mentioned Valentine's Day. So, and that, you know, is a holiday for many people, and many people will have different traditions and memories associated with those days. And we're coming into November and December, where we will be celebrating many other holidays. And so we encourage anybody listening to just think about what are some of those triggers that might be expected, or that we might, you know, might catch us off guard. If we think about them ahead of time, sometimes we're able to anticipate and we're able to plan what we'll do when those things do sort of hit us, because we can't avoid all the grief triggers. If we did, we would just have to stay home. We will encounter these things, and sometimes we can feel a little bit stronger and a little more brave when we know how we'll handle them when we encounter them.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll go now to Maureen with us in La Crosse. Maureen, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to tell us about, Maureen?
Well, my parents, first of all, I'm an older adult. I'm 70 years old, and I lost both my parents, who were in their 90s, in 2014, within like an eight month period. And they had, up until that time, both been extremely healthy, and I was extremely close to them. I don't have children of my own. And it has had a profound effect on me. It seems strange, but I never even thought about them leaving, which I know sounds silly, but I guess it was denial. I guess what I'm saying is that sometimes I do bring it up now and then, but I feel silly in a way that an older adult should be going through this kind of grief when they've had their parents around for such a long time.
Maureen, thank you so much for sharing that story. Doesn't sound silly to me. Litsa, what do you think?
No, Maureen, I think that one of the things that often happens, Ken Doka, who's a grief researcher, gave us this word called disenfranchised grief, when we feel like society doesn't validate our grief in the way that we would hope. I think often that happens with older adults, when the reality is, when you've had your parents with you for 70 years of your life, to imagine what it means to lose people who've been with you for so long, in many ways, they're they're often more deeply integrated into what your life has looked like for so many years. And so I think it is not at all silly. And I think that it's really important that we talk more about this idea that whether it is someone who is an older adult or much younger, that many times we really don't anticipate what life will feel like when they're gone. Even though we know in theory they may not always be with us, we can't anticipate what that will feel like. So one of the things we talk a lot about on our site is this idea of secondary losses. Oftentimes we don't realize that we lose the person who's been our cheerleader or like our companion who we talk to on the phone every day. Or sometimes we feel like that person we were a caregiver in some way to them. And so our identity has been connected with them. So we've got the loss of the person, but we've often got these many other parts of our lives that change because of that loss. And so it can have a ripple effect into so many different areas and impact us very deeply at any age.
Thanks so much for sharing that story, Maureen. We are talking to Litza Williams and Eleanor Haley. They're the co-founders of the grief website community, What's Your Grief? Back to your calls now. Ray is with us in Eagle River. Ray, hi.
Hello. Thank you so much for taking my call. I lost my mother back in February, and my life seems to be so full that I feel as if I haven't really processed the loss of my mother. And I've found a couple of triggering events just recently, and I believe that I'm experiencing delayed grief. And I'm wondering about if you have any words of wisdom you could share where I could start to really get in touch with my grief and really experience the loss in a healthy way.
Ray, thanks for the call. Eleanor?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's hard to say without really being able to have a longer conversation. Something we would often look into if we're talking to somebody who's having these feelings is we would look into, is it avoidance? Is the person avoiding their loss? And is the person avoiding reminders of their loss? And if the answer to that is yes, then we would certainly encourage somebody who's experiencing this to find more opportunities to connect with memories, to connect with some of those emotions that they're experiencing. Maybe it's through things like journaling. Maybe it is going to see a counselor, a support group. Maybe it's just looking through a photo album and connecting with memories in that way. That said, just because you're not grieving in the way that you might have expected or in the way that we often see depicted in television and the movies where a person is beside themselves crying doesn't mean you're doing it wrong. Many people, as Litza mentioned earlier, are a little more rational in their grief. They find they're more hands-on doers in the way that they cope and do things. They might be the one who plans the memorial service, or they might be the one who at the year mark might say, like, let's get together and remember our loved one in this way. And somebody might also just grieve in fits and starts. So you said you encountered a couple of triggers recently, and if you are encountering those triggers and really processing them and feeling those emotions, it may be that your grief just looks a little bit different than you expected it to look. So it's hard to tell, but I would encourage you to continue to connect with your loved one, their memory, and if there are certain emotions that are coming up and that are really tricky for you, maybe taking little time to try and process that in whatever way works for you, through maybe journaling or talking to somebody.
Ray, hope that helps. Sorry for your loss. Litza, we're all probably going to deal with grief at some point in our lives, but it seems like as a society, we're pretty bad at it. What's up with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we're pretty bad at it. And I think it makes sense that we're pretty bad at it. We don't like the idea of death. And one of the things Eleanor and I talk about a lot is that I think people hesitate to even talk about the reality that oftentimes part of our grief is dealing with our own mortality. And it's interesting what a big taboo that is. So feelings are complicated, hard feelings, sadness, being present with someone who's feeling things like anger or guilt or blame or sadness or yearning. That's hard for people. We often don't get raised knowing how to be comfortable around those feelings. So I think that's one of the big challenges. And then the other part of it is that oftentimes it does bring up stuff about our own mortality. We've heard many grievers say to us, I didn't understand why after my child died or after my husband died, it felt like people were awkward or uncomfortable around me. And then I realized that in some way I represented one of their biggest fears. And so talking to me made it real that they might live with something like that. And I've always found that to be a really profound way of thinking about why we as a society are sometimes not doing the best job supporting one another, is we don't get trained. We don't get a handbook when we're kids. We don't learn it in high school. And then it also brings up a lot of our really deep fears about our own potential losses and our own mortality.
We'll leave it there. Litza, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having us.
And Eleanor, thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you.
We've been talking to Litza Williams and Eleanor Haley. They're mental health professionals. They're the co-founders of the grief managing website community. You can check it out. It's called What's Your Grief? You can also share your thoughts on the topic over at the Ideas Network Facebook page.